A very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Cavan with you for the first 9 till noon show of 2024, and a very happy, peaceful and prosperous new year to all of you out there. It's going to be a busy show, the first of the year, but of course we want to get your opinions, we want to get your views and your take on the news of the day, or indeed the issues that you want to raise. You can text us on 086 60 25000. You can call us on 074 91 25000. Caroline producing and taking your calls, Shannon taking your calls and taking care of social media for us this morning as well. You can also use social media. We are at Highland Radio on X, we're Highland Hub on Facebook, and comments at highlandradio.com should you prefer to use email. Of course, the text number 086 60 25000, also good for WhatsApp messages as well. As we always do, we'll take a look at the papers before we go any further. And the front of the Donegal Democrat this morning: Noreen was a very gentle, kind-hearted, considerate, warm and caring lady. Tributes have been paid following the passing of Councillor Noreen McGarvey, who's been laid to rest at the age of 52. Donegal native Noreen passed away peacefully at Donegal Hospice on Thursday. And indeed, all of us in the newsroom and on the show here have had dealings with Noreen over the years, and she's been nothing less than an absolutely wonderful person to deal with. And we knew her long before she was elected a councillor, of course, because Noreen McGarvey worked very closely with Pat the Cope Gallagher. And anyone who knows Pat the Cope Gallagher's work rate will know that Pat the Cope Gallagher's office is one of the busiest public representative offices in the country ever. So anyone that worked in that office was a person who was busy, and Noreen was most certainly that. Our thoughts are with her family, and we look ahead to what happens over the course of the coming months in the Dlenthes electoral area, but there's time enough for the political talk right now. All thoughts are with Noreen and her family. Irish Independent this morning: landlords will need more tax breaks, says Minister. That's going to be a very popular opinion first thing in 2024. Tax cuts for landlords introduced in the budget can be further strengthened to keep good landlords in the market, according to the Housing Minister, Dara O'Brien. A temporary tax break worth between 600 and 1,000 euro a year was introduced in budget 2024, and Mr O'Brien says that could potentially be increased as part of budget 2025. I'm not sure how popular that suggestion is going to be among the wider populace, but we can certainly wait and see. Conversely, a housing story on the front of the Irish Daily Mail: housing crisis shows no sign of easing. 30,000 buyers for just 11,000 homes. A record number of first-time buyers are chasing the lowest supply of housing stock nationwide for more than a decade. A new report reveals there are just over 11,000 homes available to buy nationally. That's the fewest since 2012, when there were 60,000 homes on the market. Front of the Irish Times this morning: number of Garda roads officers fell as deaths rose in 2023. You'll have heard Michaela with that story on the news over the course of the morning. Also, sharp rise in schools seeking emergency funds. Records indicate just one primary school successful in securing additional funding. And we've heard several stories from schools in Donegal. Indeed, one school had its case raised in the Dáil on a number of occasions. Schools which particularly found themselves short of money because they took in refugee children and their class sizes were considerably increased, but because this all happened after the Department of Education cut off for funding and for capitation budgets and so on and so forth, they got no extra money. Let's move on to the tabloids. Irish Daily Mirror this morning: Tubridy's right turn, or I suppose it's supposed to be return. It's not the best pun ever I've seen on the front of a tabloid paper, and we've seen some fairly bad ones over the years, let's be honest. Star back on airwaves. Ryan Tubridy will return to Irish airwaves today for the first time since the RTE secret payment scandal erupted last summer. The presenter will host a new 3-hour programme on Virgin Radio UK in London, which will also be broadcast on Dublin's Q102. The former Late Late Show star, who is 50, said, "I'm really looking forward to getting back on the Irish airwaves and to the listeners who have supported me since day one." And that's going to be really interesting. If Ryan Tubridy is doing a radio show on a UK radio station, but it's being syndicated to an Irish Dublin station, so he's going to be trying to stick in content for the Irish people who know who he is, but he's also trying to win over a UK audience, which, let's face it, despite all the hyperbole, most people in the UK don't have a clue who he is. So he is going to have to establish himself in the UK, and it's going to be very interesting to see how he actually walks that tightrope. Front of the Irish Sun is pretty much the same story. He's back on the airwaves, Ryan and Shine. And a sub-headline, Wogan's son, "Dad tipped tubs for top." you can't bait a bit of alliteration first thing on a Tuesday morning on a bank holiday weekend and it raining outside. Ryan Tuberty has been tipped to crack the tough UK radio market by Terry Wogan's son. Mark Wogan reckons Tubbs, whose Virgin Q102 show starts this morning, can emulate the success of his late father. Ooh, now that would be a tough... Will Tuberty be as big as Wogan? Don't see it. Sorry, don't see it. Could be wrong. All the best to him. And the front of the Irish Daily Star this morning, a story very close to home. Given's Christmas pain, Shea tells of heartache. It'll never be the same, says Star, after brother and uncle die, and many people in Donegal only too aware of the sadness which has befallen the Given family over the past 10 days or so. Shea losing both an uncle and a brother, and more on that story on the inside of the paper. So that's the way things are looking this morning on our newspapers. There are stories of hope, stories of pessimism, stories of sadness, stories of joy, stories looking ahead, stories looking back. It's the start of a brand new week, and as always, it's going to be an interesting week. It's going to be an interesting month. I think it's going to be an interesting year.
The newspapers are courtesy of Kelly Centra Mountaintop Letterkenny, the 2022 C-Store National Off-Licence of the Year.
Normally at this stage we'd go for a break, but I don't want to go for a break just yet because we've a gentleman in studio with us, and he's a gentleman on something of a deadline, so I don't want to detain him too long. Delighted to say that in studio this morning is Brian McDade. Brian, you are very, very welcome indeed.
Thanks very much, Donal.
Brian, the driver, and anyone in Letterkenny will have seen this wonderful, colourful car driving around in recent days, and every time you see it there's a few more stickers, a few more logos, a few more sponsors. The drive around Ireland, Brian, starts this morning. Tell us about the venture. Brian, can you get a bit closer if you would to that microphone? Actually, you're a little bit too far away, so get a little bit close in there so your dulcet tones can be heard. Yeah.
Is that better?
That's a lot better. Yeah, a lot better. So the drive starts this morning.
I've already started. I started in Fannet this morning at 7:30.
I saw the post on social media outside your dad's old office.
That's a wee personal thing, and I'll talk about it probably later on in the drive, you know. This is I'm going to be 60 in January, 11th January, and to mark it, I just wanted to do something kind of a wee bit different. I'd done the same thing when I was 40. I drove a wee mini to Monte Carlo in memory of Eamon Harvey. And this one really probably is in memory of my mother. And I probably was thinking about her when I was doing the last one as well, you know. So I know it's a sad time, but this is a celebration of her life and a celebration of my father's life, you know. We go through a hard time at Christmas thinking about them. But the 2nd of January for us, we always move on to another year. Our family, the four boys of us, Brian, myself, Neilis, who is in Boston, and Cahill in Letterkenny, and Patter in Letterkenny.
The car, and it's an interesting one. You're going to drive around the country, and you're raising money for Donegal Hospice, which is where the drive officially sort of gets underway with the Garda Escort in, what, a little over 16 minutes' time. So we won't detain you over long, Brian. I do give you that commitment. But it's an interesting one. I was on the fundraising page last week, and at that point, I think your aim was 5,500. Or was it, aim was 6, and you were on about 5.5 at that point. You must have hit the target by now.
Yeah, we have hit the target, and we've passed the target. And if everything was in, we're well over the target between donations privately. And what I've found this time compared to the last time I've done it, there are a lot of anonymous donations there, and I never know who they are, and I never know how to thank them, you know, so... we're going well on the money, and that's the hardest part that I find of a fundraiser. I hate asking for the money. So the car, as you say, is doing the talking.
Yeah.
The car is a wee car. It's 18 years old. It's a wee Toyota, and it's 186,000 kilometres on the clock.
Mm. It's also unique, and I don't know much about cars, but I know a bit about cars. But I've never heard of a Toyota Passo before.
No, it's actually made probably by Daihatsu. And Daihatsu is owned by Toyota, and it's a Japanese import car, and it come here, and it belonged to a doctor in the town, and they were emigrating to Australia, Darwin, And they put the car up for sale, and I bought the car on Facebook.
I saw that. I mean, and we are friends on Facebook, so yeah. I mean, I've been following this, and it's a very interesting one. So I remember you put up the first picture, and I thought, well, that just looks like a slightly strange Yaris. But it is this very interesting model. It's an automatic as well, which hopefully will make the drive a little easier, or will it?
No, it's, you know, this, once you get used to the automatic, and just it's not wild powerful, and mind you, I'm not that small, so it has a brave way.
Yeah.
So it goes well. It's lovely to drive. I was coming up from Fannett this morning there, and even there were a couple of cattle lorries actually passed me. So you'll know I'm not going that fast.
So you know you aren't going to be breaking the speed limit, getting into trouble with the car along the way.
Definitely,
you know?
Not. Definitely not. Just, and it's a drive round at my ease on my own. And take in if you want to stop, if you see something, you know, you're not. Yeah, I have a timeline, but it's stretched after this morning, it'll be stretched out, you know. So, car's going great. Paul Reed, Reed Motorsport, done a deep look at it, and he just, very little had to be done. A couple of brake pipes in the back, and a couple of drives, and oil and filter. And that was it.
Now, I have to say, Brian, I drove from Waterford via Carlow to Letterkenny yesterday. And that was a nasty old day to be driving in now, to be honest. You've not picked the best time of the year for a drive around Ireland.
No, well, do you know this? I was coming up this morning and I left Fannett and it was lovely. And it started to lash the rain and I came into Milford. And at the same time, do you know this? I'm sitting in and for me, the journey is always a part of the destination.
Yeah.
You know, and I enjoy driving, the car's going well, and listening to music, and it's a CD player's in it, so there's a lot of old CDs with not scrape on them there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm listening away to them, but no, I'll enjoy it, and I enjoy driving in the winter as well. It gives you a kind of a wee bit of therapy when you're driving, and when you're on your own, I find it great, just, you know.
Which came first, the car or the idea?
Oh, the thing about that car, well, that car there is going up and down past my house every day and I never even noticed it, but the idea was there. But
yeah,
I was thinking about another money, but just couldn't get one, you know. And that wee car, once I sat on it, the very first day I went over one of the speed ramps up Glencairn, I says, this is different. This is the car.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea was there for a long time. And I wasn't, you know, this, I never said to anybody at all, not even my family, because they would be saying, Brian, what are you doing that for? What, you know, why bother? You know, or what do it? You know, but this is what I enjoy. And I enjoy taking the photographs and I enjoy driving, you know, so that idea is there. You know.
And will there be some form of, I'm sure there will be, knowing you, there will be a pictorial record, most certainly, because, I mean, anyone who follows you knows you get great pictures every day. But I mean, is there even the possibility of a coffee book out of this? Because you certainly have the skill to get a really good coffee book of pictures around Ireland.
Well, there'll be coffee, but there might be no book.
Well, there's one certain establishment in town that you're pretty much keeping in business, I get the impression. Because of all the time I see you, 80% it's waving to you through a window.
Yeah, that's right. And the slash in the rain and you are out walking and you're enjoying it, you know, so.
I think we're both where we want to be.
Aye,
there's a little part of me would prefer to be where you are, but no, we won't go there.
Well, no bother. No, it's very good. Very happy with it. And just as I say, the donations is what it's about. And it is working well and we just want to keep it going now and get a nice, you know, donation towards the hospice. That's what it's about.
Well, Brian, all the best with it. We let you go to the hospice and get your... There's a car that escorts from the hospice to O'Donnell Park and then it's off to Leitrim via a run around Donegal.
Mind you, an odd time the guards were behind me going down the street, but today they'll be in front of me, you know. Yeah. So,
Brian, I mean, as I say, anyone who's been in Letterkenny will have seen the car. It's a lovely blue car, festooned with stickers. It's been all over the place, particularly parked outside Max on the High Road. Let's be honest about it. That's where you see it most.
You know this? I'm actually a bit embarrassed going into Max because anytime we go in, they think I'm looking for a donation and I'm not, you know, but that's...
Well, you've given them so much business they want you twice over, Brian, let's be honest now.
No bother.
Brian McDade, all the best with it. Oh, and by the way, in advance, happy birthday for the 11th as well.
No, thanks very much.
Brian, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We wish you all the best with the journey. People can, I'm sure, if they want to help, still do.
Yeah, we have an iDonate page and it's easy to donate it. And there's even a wee QR code on the car.
Yeah.
Anybody sees it, they can actually take a picture of it and it'll donate straight up. Just
jeez, lads isn't technology. Brian, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
No bother. Thank you very much, Tony.
Just to let you know what the crack is with Brian. Brian started, as we said, at Fannett this morning. Now, he started, as he said, a very personal journey. It was outside where his dad used to work for the ESB. And he is now heading for the Donegal Hospice at 9:30, gets a Garda escort from O'Donnell to O'Donnell Park. And then it's Glendone around about 10:30. Ballybuffet about 1 o'clock, Loch Esk at about 2, and then he's hitting Fermanagh at about 3, drive around Fermanagh, and then County Leitrim at 7, and hopefully Brian gets a really nice run through Fermanagh as well. It should be a very interesting drive indeed. Now, we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about Port Salon Pier, because a project was to have started at Port Salon Pier over the course of the summer in order to draw down funds so that they could have the funds drawn down in advance of a deadline in October. I'm joined on the line by Mary from Port Salon. Mary, a very good morning to you.
Thanks, Donald. Good morning to you too.
Mary, a lot of plans for Port Salon, but have those plans come to fruition?
Well, that's what we're wondering. The community's kind of been left high and dry here at the minute. And back in June, there was a hurriedly called public meeting where we were told work had to start on the pier in July. And the pier would be closed to the public from the 1st of July because work had to be completed by the 31st of October in order to draw down funding under the Brexit Adjustment Infrastructure Marine Scheme. So the community weren't happy, to say the least, but we knew the work had to be done, and if this was the time frame, then we'd put up with it. So that's what happened, and work commenced, and the October deadline has passed. Work is still ongoing, but in the run-up to Christmas week, we had awful storms here, and the sheet piling that had been put up at the end of the pier has now fallen and it's halfway into the sea. And we're wondering why the work started at the busiest time of the year, why they didn't wait, and if funding had to be drawn down, it obviously wasn't because the work's still ongoing.
Now, we know that sometimes the bureaucracy of the way these things work tends to be that effectively money has to be drawn down, work has to start, and the work has to be finished by a certain amount of time. And if the work isn't started and finished by the certain amount of time and the money isn't actually quartered off, then the money can be lost. And we saw a situation develop, I mean, at the Riverine between Strabane and Lifford comes to mind, where they had to postpone the whole project for at least a year because they couldn't get foreshore licences in time and the money fell. So money can be lost. And it does sometimes, it does raise, the financial year does tend to go from, from January to December. So if money isn't drawn down by December, which means work has to be finished a month before the money can be drawn down, it can be very, and maybe what's needed here is a whole new funding system that actually realises that there's no point in trying to do rush jobs in the middle of October just to draw down money when you might be better off doing the job at a different time.
Exactly. And I mean, we were left with the situation where businesses were, you know, with a fortnight's notice, basically told, well, tough, put up with it. I mean, we have Airbnbs, we have a shop over there, we have the store's bar. The pier is the whole hub of Port Salon. And here we are now facing into a new year, 2024, and we're wondering, well, what's in store for us this season? Is this going to be finished? I mean, the waste of the money over there. I mean, you just have to look at the pier now and think to yourself, my God, they're going to have to start again from scratch. You know, so they've started in July. It's now December. So they're almost half a year on this project already. Mm. And they've got nowhere. So, I mean, we're left thinking, well, how are these tenders, you know, how do people get them? I mean, the construction firm that's over there, obviously, haven't a clue.
Now, and sorry, I'm going to cut across you there, Mary. We cannot make comments about any firms. We cannot, I mean, the weather is going to play a factor.
No.
I'm not an engineer. I don't know if you're an engineer. I'm certainly not. I certainly cannot stand over any comment about a company or about the quality of anything that anyone has done.
No, yeah, that's fair enough. But I mean, you just need to look at Port Allen Pier now. And like, this is a pier, it's a historic pier. It was built in the 1850s, extended in the 1870s, when there were no feats of engineering. And here we are looking at it today, thinking, what's going on?
And the real, from the point of view of the business company, from your point of view and from the point of view of local businesses, you sort of put up with losing the 2 months of August, the July, August, etc. last season on the basis that you would say, okay, we're going to lose out in summer 2023 on the basis that come the start of the season, I mean, and effectively the start of the season these days is Easter, that from Easter, Easter 2024, we're going to have a spank new modern pier that's going to meet all the requirements and everything. So you put up with the first blockage on the understanding that you would have something in 2024 that would be worth waiting for as such. It doesn't appear that's going to happen by Easter, if at all by the summer.
If at all by the summer, So we're just wondering now where we stand and where the Port Salon community stands. We just feel that we've been just treated like, oh, this is going to happen, and put up with it. And here we go again. Here's another summer now, Easter summertime, and we don't know. We were told that the County Council at the time promised us that they would keep in contact with the local community. That hasn't happened. We're here and we don't know what's going on.
In terms of the local public representatives, have any of them been able to give you any idea of what's happening or what the timeframes are?
No, no timeframes at all. We were given that it was July until October the 31st, and that's all we got. We're now in January 2024 and we haven't a clue what's happening.
Yeah. In terms of weather, in fairness, it has to be said that the weather over the last couple of weeks, if not months, has not been conducive to work like this. It's been very wet, it's been very windy, it's been quite stormy. That's certainly not weather that's conducive to works on a pier. From that point of view, I mean, you know, is it like, that we didn't anticipate the weather was going to be as bad as it was?
Well, I live beside the sea. I was born beside the sea. We know you don't start a project in the middle of the year when you're going to be coming into the worst bit of weather.
Yeah.
I mean, a project like Port Salon Pier should be starting February 10th, when the weather is getting better, not when we're going into facing into the worst bit of weather.
Well, certainly.
I mean, we know Donegal weather. Everybody knows Donegal weather. I mean, what happened over there at the pier in the run up to Christmas week? We didn't even have high seas. I mean, those workers were like, oh, there's high seas, and we're like, no, they're not high seas.
Yeah.
You know. So,
Mary,
we're just left wondering.
We are trying, Mary, to get something from Donegal County Council, maybe get one of the public representatives from the area on, just to see if they can add some illumination to the situation. Thanks very much indeed for your contribution and for letting us know what the situation is. And as I say, I'm hoping we'll be able to get something before too long from one of the local public reps, and we'll see what they have to say. But for now, Mary, in Port Salon, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Donald. Thank you.
Okay, Mary, thank you. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back after these. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We were speaking to Mary just before the break about the situation in Port Salon. Work began on the pier there in July, and Mary and many other members of the local community not happy with the situation, particularly as damage was done to the pier in the high winds over the course of the past few days. Now, I'm glad to say we've been able to get Councillor Liam Blaney, who's joining us on the line, just to see if we can get an update. Liam, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald.
Councillor Blaney, we spoke to you at the time that this work was being announced, and you were confident that the work would be successful and ultimately this would be very much to the benefit of Port Salon and the community there. Are you satisfied with where this project is at the moment?
Well, I don't think anybody could be satisfied, and excuse me, Donald, I've noticed the flu on me here at the minute. I don't think anybody could be satisfied with where the pier is and the work is at the moment with the pier. But unfortunately, it was late in getting started. The buyer fund had to be spent before the end of the year. That's a European fund that was got for the pier. And a short while back, there was damage done one night to some of the infrastructure had been put up there to hold in the concrete. And as far as I know, that company I was let go that were doing that job. There were subcontractors undoing a job, and there was another company taking it on there. And then a week or 10 days, about a week ago there, just over a week ago, with the storms that we had and the rough seas, had done more damage to the piles that was out at the end of the pier. Now, I haven't got any update from Donegal County Council yet, but I will have later on, on what the story is on it. But from looking at it, I'm sure that the piles at the end of the pier probably will have to replace again. But the job, as people have seen as time went on and the damage has been done there, wasn't going to be completed by the end of the year. Whatever funding they could draw down, the council could draw down from the European funding for the time of the bar funding, was drawn down. And I've got a guarantee from our minister that whatever is required to complete the job would be put in place, and the job will be completed, and we're hoping to have it done well on this side of Easter. But now, after this recent damage, I don't know what the story is going to be as far as that's concerned.
Yeah.
But I will be talking to the engineer later on today.
Yeah. Now, the hope of the local community would have been that, and as I was saying to Mary, the hope of the community would have been that, okay, they had to give up part of the season in 2023 over the course of the summer in order to allow the works to start. And there was a lot of unhappiness in the community at that point because of the loss of the pier and the impact that was going to have on visitors, etc. But, I mean, is there any guarantee, or can a guarantee be given to them that they will have a functional pier for the summer of 2024? Because, I mean, if they were to lose a second season because work on the pier isn't complete, it could be very, very bad news for a lot of local businesses.
Yeah, well, there was unhappiness, naturally. It was until August, I think, before the work started in the pier. And there was the pier itself was closed off. The beach wasn't closed off at all from it. And there still was a small bit of activity from boats collecting the pier net. But look, there was businesses there that was very, very badly affected by it. And we understand that. And people were annoyed, but they did realise, or most people realised, some people didn't, that it was for the betterment of the pier itself, because if it was let go any longer, that it may not have stood another winter. And unfortunately, circumstances changed, and weather dictated, and the tides dictated, and the damage that was done to the infrastructure put up there for holding on the new concrete. And there was damage done to it not once but twice. And until I get an update, Donal, and I'm not trying to be evasive one way or another, until I get an update, hopefully later on today, and I will come back to you if you want at that stage.
Yep.
And I do intend to hold another public meeting down on Port Sal. And Mary herself, after I held the first public meeting, did say a number of things not in favour of what was going on down there, and not in favour of myself either. And she went and got MEPs to write to the council to check up things that they thought we weren't telling the truth. But I don't be down there to tell anybody something that's happening that was not happening. I tell them the way it is, and that's the way I intend to continue as well.
Given, Liam, that we have a situation where a lot of that damage happened over the course of the Christmas holiday, obviously Donegal County Council wasn't going to have been at full staffing levels over the course of the break. Is that going to create delays in getting a full assessment of the damage here, or do you believe that damage and its implications can be assessed relatively quickly?
It may be assessed already, Donald. They have consultants down there. There's somebody permanently down on the pier along with the subcontractors, and the engineer keeps close contact with them as well. So I'm hoping maybe by a short time later from now that I will get some kind of confirmation. I'm not 100% sure if they're down there today yet or not, but I intend to go over there to see what the story is, if there's people about, and to make contact with the council engineer as well, and just to see exactly what is happening, or how badly damaged, or what has to be replaced. A long act it may take, and I'm still hoping with the bit of damage that's done down the pier that this all could be completed before the Easter holidays.
So the Easter deadline may still be achievable, but you wouldn't be giving any guarantees, or you wouldn't really be expecting people to take that for,
I can't give any guarantees on this stage, but I'm still very hopeful, Donal, after seeing the damage that was done there, that, you know, although there's a lot of, could be a lot of damage underwater that we don't see, we don't know nothing about, but I don't think it's too serious, and I do believe the stall could be completed before Easter. But look, I can't, as I say, and I'll get clarification in a while, and I'll let you know exactly what the story is.
As we understand it, some of the damage was done to supports which were holding the new work in and to piling at the end. Now, they were sort of support structures that we know were immediately damaged. Do we know yet if the actual work that was done already, that concrete that was put in place, do we know if that's been compromised, or is that really what we're waiting for?
No, I don't think any of the concrete had been in place at the time.
So there hasn't been actual work done that's potentially complicated that we have to go back to the start. You reckon
not,
they can, they can pick it up again? Yeah.
Anything had been done, I think, prior to now, I don't think anything will have to be undone. But look, until I get clarification, there's no point in me saying here, thinking one thing and not knowing. I'll get full clarification, I'll let you aware of the full story.
And do you have a timeline as to whether when you're going to hold this next public meeting you're planning?
Yeah, I hope to have it maybe by the end of this week or beginning of next week. If I can get the council engineer to come down with me as well, because I think it's important that they're there to be able to answer questions that I wouldn't be able to answer. And in fairness, when I held the first public meeting, our council engineer came down as well, as did our local newspaper editor, John McAteer. They were all there that evening, and I do intend to hold this as soon as I can again as well, to allay any fears. But until I get full story, until we know what exactly the situation is, I don't think there's any point in holding it and only having half answers for people.
Right. Well, we leave it there for the moment, Councillor Liam Blaney, and we will watch with interest to see what happens. But as we say, just clarification on the extent of the damage and its implication, you hope to have that very shortly indeed, and we look forward to hearing what that may be. In the meantime, Councillor Liam Blaney, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Donal. I'll be touching you shortly.
Okay, Liam, thank you. Take care. And that's Councillor Liam Blaney there. And hopefully we'll be able to get some answers to satisfy those questions raised by Mary, because they're obviously very valid and very important questions. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. If you want to make contact with us, you can text us or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. You can call us 074 91 25000. We're at Highland Radio on X. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. comments@highlandradio.com on email should you choose to email us. Just want to read to you a letter that's been received. Hello, Greg. My name is Susie from South Donegal. I am 70 and I don't do email or texts. I have been told I have a condition called lumbar spinal stenosis. I have had a steroid injection, but it hasn't worked. As I'm writing this, I'm in agony. I've been given painkillers, but they are no good. I'm just wondering if any of your listeners have the same condition. What pain relief worked for them, or what treatment did they get? I can't sleep for any more than a few hours at night. I'm beginning to think it's age-related, and I'm not getting much help from doctors and specialists. It's come to the stage where I can't do very much, shopping, dancing, or going for a walk, or even household work. It's totally ruining my life. Thank you for reading this letter. Now, as we say, it's lumbar spinal stenosis is the name of the condition. Susie, our correspondent, has had a steroid injection, but it hasn't worked and she's in agony. And really, you don't want to hear that anyone is in agony, particularly someone of advanced years as she is. So if you have had any experience with lumbar spinal stenosis, have you any advice, any perspective you can give in terms of maybe what painkillers worked? Did any exercises work? Can you point Susie in any particular direction? A caller asks, can I ask what's the law on returning items to a store? I bought a clothing item and returned it after 2 days, only to be told you can't get money back anymore, only a credit note. Thank you very much indeed. So says a caller. Now, I listened to, it may have been Dermot Jewell, I certainly listened to someone from the Consumers Association speaking just before Christmas, and one of the points they did make was that if there is not a defect in the product, a store is not under any legal obligation to take it back. Some stores will take it back and give money for it. Some stores will take it back and give a credit note. But that's the store's own policy. They are under no legal obligation to take back a product, provided the product isn't faulty. There's no indication in the message here that the product is faulty. So some stores will have a policy on things like gift receipts before Christmas, others won't. And my recollection from hearing from the Consumers Association is very much it's a matter from store to store what their response may be. And that's the best I can offer at the moment. If I'm incorrect and anyone has any better perspective on it, please do text us or call us, as we said, 086 60 25000, or 07491 25000 if you're calling by phone. But that's my recollection of the situation. Now, we are going to speak to Susan Gray from Park. And you may recall that Susan has been quoted on a story that's been running today on the papers. It's a slightly separate story to this one, but we will certainly be asking Susan about the whole issue of Garda policing numbers. It's an issue we have, of course, discussed before. But we're going to talk about the driving test and the fact that 5,585 tests were lost last year because of no-shows up until November. And that seems to me a strange situation. Let's discuss this with Susan Gray, who is the founder and chair of Park. Susan, good morning.
Good morning, Don.
Susan, I know that to get a test takes potentially 6-7 months. I mean, and the waiting list in some test areas is literally stretching into 30, 40 plus weeks. The fact that there were 5,585 no-shows for tests, given that there's been a waiting list of half a year, and given that a hefty application fee has been paid, that seems to me to be at the very least highly surprising.
Isn't it just? But it's happening year on year, and we've been reporting it through the media, to the ministers, various ministers of transport, and to the Road Safety Authority, because the Road Safety Authority noticed this loophole, for want of a better word, back in 2013, where thousands of learners were just rolling over their permit.
Yeah.
All they had to do was apply for the learner permit to sit. No, all they had to do was apply to sit the test, pay the RSA €85, and if they didn't turn up for the test, the RSA still renewed their permit. So in 2013, the RSA and their road safety strategy then promised to close this loophole, yeah, make it mandatory by the first quarter of 2014. Here we are, 10 years later now, and they're still rolling over their permits. Mm. The Irish Times did a great report in October showing that up to 30,000 learners that were on their third or subsequent permit had never, ever sat a driving test. It's appalling. It just beggars belief that, you know, this is still allowed to happen. So we welcome the Mr. Chambers announcement, yeah, there after we got the latest figures through a PQ from the Road Safety Authority. He announced there last week that when he gets the backlog of driving test waiting times down to approximately 10 weeks,
yeah,
which he believes will be by the middle of this year, 2024, so by June or July, yeah, he will then make legislative changes to make it mandatory for a learner to sit.
Is it your belief that some people are effectively choosing to continue to drive on a provisional licence rather than take a test, and that this is a strategy on their part?
Yes, well, the figures speak for themselves. Almost, what, 6,000? Tests lost.
Yeah.
Like in October alone, 697 learners,
yeah,
just didn't bother to show up for their tests. We're not talking about people who cancel the test,
yeah,
and give a reason and get another test. These people are simply not showing up.
Yeah.
And what that is creating is a bigger backlog for the poor learners that's waiting and waiting for a test. Because these no-shows, the testers are sitting in the driving test centres waiting on these drivers. Yeah. They don't know they won't show up. So that test slot is gone. So we estimate like January to November, yeah, 5,500. December, an average of another 400. So we claim that when we get the figures for December, there's going to be over 6,000 tests,
yeah,
it's lost because of no-shows. So this new law cannot come in quick enough. If a learner does not bother to turn up for his or her test, why in God's name is the RSA continuing to renew their permit?
And the next follow-on question from that is if there are learner drivers choosing to continue to drive on a provisional licence rather than take a test, does that now mean effectively that there are many thousands of provisional licence holders effectively driving without an accompanied driver? Because the law is quite specific with regards to people with provisional licences. You cannot drive unaccompanied. That is the law. So if there are people choosing to retain a provisional licence rather than take a test, does that suggest, certainly in the case of some of them, that they are out there on a provisional licence driving unaccompanied?
Well, if you follow the Garda updates on Twitter and Facebook, they are continually on a weekly basis highlighting that they're stopping learner drivers unaccompanied as well too. And they're seizing the car under the Clancy Amendment. It doesn't seem to be working that law, sadly, because some guards are reporting 3 weeks later they're catching the same learner driving unaccompanied. They only have to pay just €125 to get the car back from the compound. So that law is not working. So the poor guardy are out there catching, detecting these drivers right, left and centre, while the RFA are not helping them one iota and close it. If they close this loophole and made it mandatory for a learner to sit the test, the guards wouldn't be catching half as many unaccompanied learners, because a lot of them would have taken the time and effort to actually practice and sit for the test. And the law of averages is a lot of them won't pass. They will not be on our roads, so I'm experienced. And the guards won't have half as much work to do on getting these, detecting these unaccompanied learners, because a lot of them will be fully qualified drivers. It's not rocket science. Yeah. And yet the RSA, the figures we have, they retain €85 every time a driver doesn't turn up for their test. In 2023, they have made over they have retained over half a million on no-shows. €500,000 on no-shows.
Yeah. I want to move on. I'm going to move on in a moment to the whole question about the loss of members from the policing, roads policing unit in Donegal, and it's an issue we've discussed before. I want to go back to that in a moment. Before I do, questions just come in. Do Susan and Park have an opinion on the amount of young people driving large tractors on provision licences, and do you have any plans to campaign on changing the regulations on this?
Today is the day for these two issues, and, that other issues for another day. We have so many issues coming to our door, and we're a small group. Let us concentrate on these two for today, please.
Okay, that's fair enough. So let's move on to the issue of numbers within roads units. And we know that nationally the amount of road deaths has increased. We know in Donegal in 2023 the number of road deaths was 10. The previous year, 2022, it was 8. We had an increase of 2 over the course of the previous year. You believe there is a link between what appeared to have been the diminution of numbers in policing units and the corresponding increase in road deaths across the country?
Yes. That's our belief. And we've only 641 valuable members in our roads tracing units right across the country. It's been reduced time and time again. It's always going in the wrong direction. This year alone, we lost up until November, and that's the latest official figures that we got these figures from. And we lost 47 members from our roads tracing units. Now, when we did a breakdown per count by county, sadly, we realised Donegal suffered the most in 2023. Highest reduction in members in our roads policing units. In March, September, October and November. We haven't got the figures for December yet. Now, the next county suffering the worst is Kerry, and then Wicklow and Kildare. Now, surprisingly enough, in Mayo, when we looked at the figures, the Mayo, where the road safety authority is based, there was no reductions last year in road tracing units. Now, the Gardaí Commissioner, a few years ago, said that by 2020 or 2021, he was determined that we would have over 1,000 members in our roads policing unit. Now, that would lead you to believe that he firmly believed that there was a huge need for this. And yet, there were just now 641. And the government keeps saying that as more Gardaí are being trained in Tempermore, there will be ones allocated to, will release other Gardaí to allocated or deployed to roads policing units. We've had 277 new Gardaí trained since October. We want to know, has any of them gone to roads policing units? If so, we want to break down Per County. Are any that's going, are they going just to Dublin?
Yeah.
It's not fair. There should be, somebody would need to tackle this. Next year, we've had 184 this year, the highest in almost a decade of road deaths. Do we want to say next year?
The worry now is that there's going to be extra Gardaí sent to Dublin because of the riots of last month, and the fear is that whatever commitments there may have been there to send more Gardaí to the region, be it for roads policing or general policing, the worry now is that Dublin is going to get an extra amount of new Gardaí and even transfers of current Gardaí in order to tackle the problems being caused by those riots and ongoing issues with regards to what's happening with refugees, asylum seekers, etc. So the fear is that Dublin may begin actually sucking up those resources, so whatever chance we may have had of seeing increases may actually be lessened to an extent.
Exactly. But if that's happening, tell the truth. Don't have our hopes up saying as more Gardaí are being trained, they will be going on to units. We will be keeping such a close eye on this, you have no idea. We will be asking for figures every single month. And thank God we have the likes of Highland and the national radio station and the TV. Thank God we have the media following and reporting on this, because this is wrong what's happening. It is wrong. 184 precious lives lost last year. Yeah. Highest in almost 10 years. And yet they're taking people, the valuable members in our roads policing units. We can't get a breakdown of the reasons. Are some retiring? Are some being promoted? Are some being removed to others? We would love a breakdown, but yeah, we just can't get it. And a valuable thing people need to know as well is that figure of 641. We don't know if that's the actual figure, because we're asking now how many of those 641 members in our roads policing units across the country, how many of them are actually active members? Are they... You know, we need to know how many out of that are actually active on a daily basis. Okay.
Susan, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And we will be keeping up with yourself and keeping an eye on the situation for now. Susan, thank you very much indeed. Now, caller says, I live in the Finn Valley area. The amount of learner drivers on roads every single day with no full drivers accompanying them is crazy. I see them when I am going to work. Now, the caller says, there is a loophole left in every law to keep the solicitors and the barristers happy. They must get their pound of flesh as well. They become judges, all political appointments, so suggests a caller. We spoke earlier about the pier at Port Salon, and a caller says, does Councillor Blaney not communicate with Minister McConnellogue, the minister responsible? Now, in fairness, Councillor Blaney did say he has been in touch with Charlie McConnellogue, and he's got a guarantee from Minister McConnellogue that any extra money required to complete the job in Port Salon because of the damage that's been done to the pier, that extra money will be forthcoming. So from that point of view, yes, Councillor Blaney did say he has been in contact with the minister and he's got that guarantee. Minister McConnellogue will say he has got no function in terms of the timing of a job and the rules are when money becomes available through Europe. You have to spend the money in a particular given period, and that in a number of cases is what's actually leading to work starting at times that some people may believe is the wrong time. So maybe there needs to be a fresh look right across the board at the tendering systems, the funding systems, the way the money is allocated, and ask the question, is this the most efficient way of spending our money? Is this the most efficient way of making sure that you're getting optimum amount of work done for the most value, for the most efficient time, etc., etc.? And if we have a situation where the work is following the pattern of the funding rather than the funding following the pattern of the work, if that makes sense. As long as, I think, as long as the work is being determined by the funding rules, there are going to be issues, I think, like this will be very often cropping up. Caller says, Donal, I'm not familiar with the peer job, but that lady says we all know the Donegal weather, but this year it's been wetter than most, so that could delay the process. Allowances do have to be made. That's just my view. And indeed, that's what Councillor Blaney did say, that the weather over the past couple of weeks has been not conducive to getting work finished, and some of the heavy high winds have been causing damage on two occasions. Damage was done to pilings and to supports on the pier, and indeed, if you see the pictures of the pier, it does not look like a job that's going to be finished anytime soon. Now, that said, we still know that Donegal in the winter is going to be windy. Donegal in the winter is going to be wet. Donegal in the winter is going to be cold. So whereas the weather may have been worse than usual, can you say that we expected to get mild, clement weather in Donegal that would allow building work be done on a pier in December? I'm not sure you can totally go along that line of logic. Another caller says, nothing new on council-run projects, complete disaster time-wise and money-wise. Now, I think that's probably a touch unfair, but as I said earlier, maybe it's time to start looking back at the whole way these projects are funded, the whole way this work gets done, and look at how these models work, because there are certainly issues that do need to be looked at. There is no doubt about that.